Our next speaker is Frank Dillon. He is an assistant professor in the Robert Semple College in Public Health and Social Work at Florida International University. His research interests include health disparities and mental health issues affecting racial, ethnic, and sexual minority groups in the United States. He has co-authored over 40 journal articles or book chapters concerning cultural and social determinants of substance use disorders and risk behaviors, culturally relevant and valid psychological assessments, and also multicultural competence practice.
Thank you. It's great to see such a large turnout for a talk on statistics. I'm going to be talking about measurement equivalence analyses of the short inventory of problems revised that was used with drug abusing adult outpatient racial groups. To begin with, there are no financial disclosures, but I do want to acknowledge that this study was a secondary data analysis using data from the National Institute on Drug Abuse's clinical trials network, publicly available data. There, that website where you can obtain information and actual databases is ctndatashare.org. It's very valuable. And specifically, we use data from CTN004, which I'll talk a lot more about in the presentation. So as probably all of you know, our research, especially behavioral science research, involves very intangible, as well as tangible, constructs when we do our studies, like depression, anxiety, well-being, quality of life. These are all intangible. And measurement invariance, let me start with talking about measurement variance. Measurement invariance or equivalence. What we mean by that is when participant groups understand the construct that the measure is intending to measure equivalently. So there is no variance in their understanding of the construct, such as depression, anxiety, or well-being. And it's measured similarly across the groups. And usually these analyses are including groups of based on demographics like gender groups, racial groups, ethnic groups, but it really depends on your research question. So measurement non-equivalence or variance is introduced when two groups or more than two groups experience or conceptualize a construct differently, or they may define or use distinct criteria to describe a measurement construct. This is theorized to occur because of cultural differences, such as cultural differences in cultural norms or relevance of a construct between the groups. Of course, the language of the measure will affect that, and the participants' competency in that language, and differences in the participants' environment or context in terms of engaging, having the ability to engage in the behavior that's being observed, or having the ability or sort of worldview to develop the beliefs that the measure is intending to measure. So in this study, we looked to determine the measurement equivalence properties of the short inventory of problems revised. Like I said before, this was a study done with the NIDA CTN data, one specific clinical trial, which I'll describe. And our participants were African-American adults and non-Latino white adults as well. So substance use-related consequences is the construct that's measured by the short inventory of problems. And it's an increasingly studied construct because it complements standard measures of substance use treatment outcomes. The standard measures are usually quantity and frequency of use, and this is a measure of your patient's or your client's perception of their the consequences of their use. And it's used a lot in motivational interviewing or motivational enhancement therapy studies because raising awareness of the consequences of substance use is a target of those treatments or that approach. Just to give you a little history on the SIP-R, it comes from an original 50-item measure called the Drinker Inventory of Consequences that was developed in the mid-90s. It was shortened to a 15-item measure to be used in clinical practice. And I'm looking at the SIP-R, still a 15-item measure. It's just that when they implemented it in the CTN, they changed a couple of items, the wording of a couple of items. But across all of these phases of development, there have been five domains or factors theorized to underlie the measure. They are impulse control consequences, interpersonal consequences, intrapersonal, physical, and social. And here you can see the measurement model that we are testing for equivalence or invariance. There are the five hypothesized latent constructs, the items that are hypothesized to load onto them, and the residual variances, which I'll talk about in a moment. And that's the item response set for this measure. And there are 15 items. I think I already mentioned that. So it most recently was administered in the NIDA CTN clinical trials. Specifically, four clinical trials have used this measure. One was an effectiveness trial of motivational interviewing. Another was an effectiveness trial of motivational enhancement therapy. And the other two were motivational enhancement therapies for specific populations, pregnant substance users and Spanish-speaking clients. Now, despite all of these trials using this measure, it's important to note that measurement equivalence or invariance across racial groups has not been reported, has not been explored yet. And this is true for a lot of drug abuse treatment outcome measures. There was a recent publication looking at the basic psychometric properties of this measure using the CTN data for the motivational interviewing and motivational enhancement trials. And note that 56% of the patients were non-Latino white and 27% African-American, 7% Latino. And this study reported that the five factors did seem to explain the model, that there was good internal consistency of the measure overall, that it has some good validity indicators as well. But still, even though that the study involved so many, such a diverse sample, they did not look at measurement equivalence across the racial groups. And really, for over 20 years about, people have been calling for this type of analysis in addition to the standard psychometric classical test theory analyses that are done because a measure can appear reliable across groups and yet still be non-equivalent in terms of measurement variance. And when that happens and you compare two groups, say the means on your measure of two groups, you don't know if a significant difference that is obtained is due to actual mean differences between the groups or due to the differences in the factor loadings on the measure that you're studying, or both. So, like I said before, we took our sample from one clinical trial, the meta-effectiveness study. Just to give you a little bit more details, that trial involved three additional sessions to standard intake procedures at 5 community-based outpatient treatment programs across the country, and included 464 outpatient adults. In terms of the analyses, we analyzed 195 African-American participant and 194 non-Latino white participant responses on the measure. We had to drop 59 Latino participants and 16 other category participants because these groups were too small to do the multi-group confirmatory analyses to answer our study aims. And the sample was about 36 years old, and African Americans were a bit older than the white participants, and most of the sample was male, 71%. So in terms of just testing the measurement model fit, we use the standard fit indices that are often used and reported, specifically the confirmatory fit index and the root mean square error of approximation. And there are some guidelines there that are reported and debated about in the literature, as everyone knows. And then we used some indices for testing the differences in model fit when we were testing the different levels of measurement and variance as well. Specifically, intake procedures at variance would be rejected if there was a change in the chi-square model fit between the two models that we were testing, a significant change, or if there was a change in the CFI of greater than 0.01, or a change in the RIMC of greater than 0.015. So here are the results. The first step to take was looking at the measurement models just with the African-American sample and just with the non-Latino white sample, just to see if we have a good fit in each group. And thankfully we did, because if we didn't, that would have probably stopped our analyses because we couldn't go to test the other questions. So we did get a good fit in each group. And next we looked at configural, the most basic form of measurement and variance. And this is done through a couple different software programs, but we used M+, which is a really pretty easy multi-group analysis command function. And here we ran the measurement model across the groups, not imposing any equality constraints, and we got suitable fit indices, and that suggests that we have the same theorized factor structure across both groups. Next, we looked at the first level of item or metric invariance, called sometimes people call that weak metric invariance. And here we constrained the factor loadings across the groups and compared that with the configural model in terms of fit indices. And there were no significant differences in chi-square, and there wasn't a big change in the CFI or RMC. So the factor loadings were deemed invariant fit indices. And there were no significant differences in chi-square, and there wasn't of the latent factors are the same across the groups, and that, in other words, one unit change in on the scale in one group is relatively equivalent to one unit change in another. Next, we looked at strong metric invariance, or scalar invariance, some people call it. Here's where we constrained the item intercepts, and here we had our first suggestion of variance or non-equivalence. So this is problematic because this finding suggested that the intercepts are different on some of the items across between the two groups. And when a latent construct is zero, that's when every item has a certain intercept value. And if what we found was, if I could cohere, these three items, the intercepts for these three items were higher for African-American participants than non-Latino white participants, and lower for item number three as well. So this is problematic because it suggests that people in different groups have to report different levels of an item in order to get the same score as the other group. So there's a suggestion of variance. And then finally, we had strict. We tested strict invariance. We were ultimately able to get to show partial invariance by fixing these items, constraining them to zero, and then moving forward with the strict invariance. And then we strict invariance test equivalent item residual variances. And this, again, we found a problem, or we found measurement non-equivalence, specifically that some of the residual variability on specifically two items were larger among African-American participants. And this is problematic because it introduces error and lowers reliability for probably, for definitely the interpersonal subscale, since those items came from there. So in conclusion, why go through these steps? Why run all these nested models? Well, historically, racial ethnic minority adults are overrepresented in drug treatment programs, but they're underrepresented in clinical trials for the effectiveness of drug treatment programs. So there have been many calls for more studies to look at the differential effectiveness of drug treatments across racial ethnic groups. A few studies have began to do that, but in order to do it, we need conceptually and structurally equivalent outcome measures across these groups to make sure any differences obtained in outcome are valid. In the end, should you use the SIT-VAR when you're working with diverse clients? I think so. I think we were able to get to a place of invariance by constraining a couple of items. So basically, it is equivalent across the groups as long as you do such an analysis as this. So future studies, I'd recommend to look at these six items to make sure that they're not problematic when you are using the scale in diverse samples. Thank you.